One, two, three, four, just another day at my dead-end profession. I'm living day to day, yeah, listening to some good old country records on the radio. And yeah, what else can I say?
Welcome back to the program. I'm Ryan. With me, as always, is Dave.
What's up?
And Bobby.
Woo!
Before we get started, let's talk about how shows went this week. Bobby, did you have any shows?
I did not.
You know, you're,
it's going to be a quick segment, huh?
I've been meaning to say this to you for a while. You're a successful archaeologist. You're a family man. You're a homeowner. Mm-hmm. You're an educator of sorts. But
it's a grave robber.
You are like the fourth laziest comedian I have ever met.
Dude,
I've
been off the wagon since I've been taking care of my son a lot. And I 100% own up to that. And that is one of my things that I'm also going to fix this new year.
Every time I'm like, did you do any shows? Like, no, I did something important. But I found a clay pot that shows us this tribe was here 4 years earlier than we thought. But fucking no shows. Like a loser.
You have a baby. You are now into prop comedy. You bring the kid on stage with you.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
All right. So now, Dave, before I get into my show this week, you had one last night.
I did.
And I want to. I haven't asked you about it.
Let's
I didn't go
scene.
On your Facebook. Dave has had this curse. There's this room in San Diego called Winston's. It's great ever since Alan Henderson took over it. And I don't know what that fucker did to turn the place around. He won't share that information with me. But it's like being in a legit comedy club, only it's a bar. And, but
which charges a cover too? I don't know how he does it.
I don't know.
That place when we a long time ago we would go there and it would be dead.
Yeah, time I played it when it was under different management, I was like, oh, I said I would never do this again, and here I am.
I once did a show at Winston's for 3.5 people, and you might ask how you got a half a person
I
in there.
I wasn't gonna ask.
Yeah, you'd know if you went to a Winston's audience back then.
So you know that's the thing is like now it's like it's always packed, and it's not the fault of the headliner because Alan doesn't advertise who's gonna be there.
Right.
You don't know if it's going to be Zoltan Kassis and Jesse Egan or fucking Wacky T Buttons and whoever he brought along.
But you'll see pictures online. Like, that place is packed. It's not just word of mouth. Like, you can see, okay, yes, there's actually a crowd
there.
And
so Dave's had this curse that every time he goes, and again, this is not his fault because no one knows who's going to show up. It's fucking
dead.
He's tried to, like, tape a special there.
It's been, like, 6 or 7 times.
It's been a lot. You had a show there last night.
Yeah.
Did you break the streak, or does the curse continue?
I got there a little too early, because I wasn't sure what time Alan would show up. So I'm headlining, which means I'm going around 8:30 towards the end of the show. I didn't know what time Alan would be there, so I get there at like 6:45, and it was dead. And immediately, I'm like, fuck this. And it was open mic at that time. They do open mic before the show.
Yeah.
And it was awful. It was just terrible. Open mic people and like 3 audience members.
Right.
And I was just like dreading it immediately. But then, you know, time starts to move forward. 7:15, Alan shows up. 7:30, people start to pile in. By the time the show starts, it was full.
Oh, you did.
It was a full house.
You broke the streak.
Broke the streak.
Yeah. Way to
broke
go, buddy.
But here's the fun part. I was doing my 20 minutes at the end, and you guys know I go pretty dark.
Yeah.
Sure.
And at Winston's, I feel like that's a good place to do that as opposed to a club.
It's both literally and figuratively dark. Like, if you go in there, there's no windows.
Yeah. It's a beach bar, and there's hobos out front.
Right.
Who gives a shit?
I'm about halfway into my set. I'm 10 minutes in, and I feel them starting to pull back. And I'm like, oh, shit. So I keep going a little bit. And to me, on stage, it felt like I lost the entire room. Mm. Like, I could feel it. So I'm about 14, 15 minutes in. I have 20 minutes to do. And I'm legitimately ready to call it. I'm like, you guys, I feel like I've lost the room. I don't think you guys want any more of this stuff. Alan, where's Alan at? Are we ready to wrap this up? And one woman off in the corner, God bless her soul, she's like, no, keep going. And I was like, all right, that's all I need. So I kept going a little bit more performing, basically to her and her friend.
Nice.
It's great.
But it was cool. It was a good time.
So I had a show up in Temecula, and I've been playing Temecula since 2011. I'm no stranger to that area. It was at a new place at a restaurant. Didn't go well. And restaurants can be tough, like you
said.
Absolutely. Especially because a lot of times people aren't actually coming in to hear comedy. They're coming in to eat food and like, wait, what?
They knew there was a show going on.
And even if they know there's a show, they have a meal in front of them.
Yeah.
So they're splitting their attention.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
and restaurants aren't always designed to be a stage show. Half the people are facing the wrong direction.
Right.
Here's the thing that really sucked, though, for me, is that it was only the host, one comic before me, and then a special pop-in, Rocky Osborne popped in,
mm-hmm.
and then me. So, you know, everyone before me killed. They murdered.
Right.
All right. So that's what makes it worse because I went up. They weren't really feeling me.
There's no excuse. You can't say, oh, it's a cold audience. They weren't warmed up yet.
I didn't bomb. But the fact that the people that went before me crushed and I didn't, I consider that a loss.
Yeah.
You know? So I didn't bomb, but like they weren't really feeling me. A couple people walked out. You know, there's one. And I could kind of see since the house lights are up, you know, you can see people kind of like telling their date, like, eh, he's not really in. So, yeah, so I didn't really have him. But here's what made the whole show very memorable. I'm finally getting to a spot after 9 years where people I don't know are showing up to my shows to see me. Not very much. Every show, like, anywhere from 1 to 3 people come up to me like, hey, I follow you online. I saw you were playing. I drove over and bought a ticket, you know, which is a very nice feeling, you know?
But is that why we lost 3 podcast followers after this?
So that's finally been happening for me. So at the show, there were 2 that showed up for me. One guy was like, hey, man, been following you online for a while. Name's Dallas. Nice to meet you. You know, I'm like, oh, cool. Thanks for showing up. And this other woman runs up. Not with him. He goes, Ryan Shores. She runs across the restaurant. Ryan Shores, I drove all the way out here to see you. I am such a big fan of your wife. Where is she? She's so amazing. I've been following her. She's just so beautiful. Where is she? I drove all the way here to meet her. I'm like, she's not here.
Why would she be?
She's like, she's not. Like, she looked crushed. She's like, she's not here. I'm like, no, do you take your fucking spouse to work? That didn't work for me. I'm at work. Like, I understand that if your boyfriend's in a band, every time they play, like, 1 of 3 times a year, it's a big thing, and it's his big night, and you need to be there. But I'm like, this is every week for me. I've been doing this 9 years, and she's been with me for 5 of it.
I feel like you missed out. I feel like the correct response is, she's going to show up right as the house lights go down, and then she just looks for the people who laugh the most at my jokes and then talks to them after the show.
So she was not. She was none too happy that all she was getting out of this Ryan Shores show was Ryan Shores. So yeah, she looked bummed the fuck out
that
at that news. But no, it doesn't end there. So maybe she drank a little heavy because she drove all the way out here to meet someone who isn't here.
By the way, long drives, drinking heavy, doesn't exactly go well together.
Yeah, did she say where she drove from? I'm just curious where the long drive
Los Angeles.
Okay. I was not trying to, like, you know, prolong that conversation any further. So, as I'm wrapping up, and already I told you, the crowd really wasn't feeling me. I got some laughs, but it was kind of like, there was actually some times during the show where I'd be like, I got him back. And then the next one, nothing.
Yeah.
Just cigar store Indians.
That's almost worse. You're like starting to get back on that high. Like you were like, well, this is a bad show. And then you're like, wait a second, that one did kind of well. Hey, this next one did. I'm starting to do well. And then boom, rock bottom.
Yeah. Murked. So then I'm towards the end. And I just, at this point, I just want it to be over. Cause I can feel them all looking at me like, you're not as good as the first two.
What if his closer is just, and my wife is Aaron. And then
standing ovation. So anyway, as you guys know, I have a bit in my act where I talk about, like, my wife's mean to me. The whole joke is when people say, you're lucky, man. I talk about, no, I'm not. She's mean. It's just a ha ha moment. As I deliver that line, this lady drunkenly starts slurring, Aaron is the most beautiful woman in the world. You're lucky to have her. You're not even that. She's now saying, Aaron, I have not said my wife.
Right.
All these people in the audience don't know who the fuck Aaron is.
Yeah.
And she's just now heckling because I made a joke at the expense of my wife who's not here, much to her chagrin. And that's how my Thursday went.
I've got an idea, Dave. What if from now on the icon art for our podcast is just a picture of Aaron? We'll just use her, and then we'll draw in more audience members.
I think so.
I thought you were going a different direction. I thought your idea was going to be every time Ryan does a show, you or I go with him in drag and pretend to be Aaron.
I mean, he could just bring Aaron with him.
No. It would have to be us, because then he'd have to be like, oh, yeah, she uses filters to make the pictures look a little...
Yeah, that's good. I'll just I'll spread this rumor that Aaron secretly looks like a 45-year-old dude.
Although you have to imagine, Bobby, how much worse would that experience have been if Aaron actually was there?
Ooh, yeah. Interesting question. Yeah,
I think,
like,
it would have been so much more worse.
Yeah, at some point, does the woman start like cutting open her arm and being like, "This is for you"?
Yeah.
So she's the nanny from The Omen. Speaking of stand-up, have you guys been watching The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel?
My wife loves that show. She keeps getting into it.
Isn't it like a year or two old by then?
Yeah,
I remember when it first came out. A lot of people are like, oh, this is a really good show. Really well written.
It's a good show.
It's got Lenny Bruce in it.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, brilliantly casted. Like, my wife, she didn't know Lenny Bruce was a real guy. And I was looking at that. I was like, oh, it's interesting that they have this character in here. He looks kind of like Lenny Bruce. And she's like, well, that's the name of the character.
So she didn't know. Oh,
no, but like, it's so similar that just looking at it over her shoulder, I was like, oh, that guy looks like Lenny Bruce.
Oh, wow. Yeah. No, it's a great show. Two things, though. I was just thinking about this recently and talking about it with some guys. It's a good show. For those of you that have not seen it, the premise is it takes place in like the late 50s New York. This woman who's a Jewish housewife, her husband tries to be a stand-up comic. He's dog shit at it. And she finds out he's cheating, and she just, to go vent, she goes down to the bar where he does open mics and just grabs the mic and starts riffing and becomes this like really talented stand-up comic.
Right, which is pretty much every successful stand-up story, right?
Style, absolutely, yeah.
You just go rant, and then you're successful, and then everything is skyrocketing from there.
Right.
And you've never done Winston's with 3.5 people.
That's the thing, is that I like the show, and I hope it inspires a lot of people to do stand-up, but two things. Number one, it's giving a lot of people the impression that it's that easy and that stand-up is just talking about your day with no like nuance or punchlines or joke development, because that's all she does. Like,
now, a lot of people already feel that way about stand-up. You can tell when you go to open mic, you're like, oh, this guy has no idea what jokes are. But now this show is making everybody think that's all you have to do.
And it's a good show if you ignore the stand-up. That's kind of how it is. And, like, you just have to, if you like the show, when she's on stage doing whatever, you just kind of have to go, oh, this is where good stand-up would go to make the story progress.
Insert scene here.
Insert, this is good, you know, because the audience is laughing. That also is what's funny, is, like, the because the husband was supposed to be dog shit at comedy, his stand-up wasn't any better than hers, but in this scene, the audience is laughing, and in this one, it is not. So that's how you know. They found a whole new way to use a laugh track. like, oh, the audience is laughing, so this is supposed to be funny. And then another one, she bombs, but now they're like, all right, turn the audience laughter off, and that way they'll know that she's not doing well here. So there's that. And there's also giving a lot of people the impression that it's that you'll just skyrocket if you have a good set.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea, too, because I'm sure some of us, we probably all had this idea when we first started. Man, if people just hear my really funny jokes, that's all it'll take. Right. And then you had one or two great sets, probably after bombing a few times, but one or two great sets, and you sat at home like, all right, when are the movie companies calling up? When is this going to happen? And you realize, oh, no, you've got to do that for like 10 years at for least. It to make anything.
Well, yeah, that's the progression of the show, though. It's like her first set, this bar manager decides to be her representation. Her second show, Lenny Bruce is there and decides, I'm going to take you under my wing, kid. You're coming with me. Welcome to show business. By the fourth episode, she's on tour. I'm like, oh, man, someone's going to watch this and be like, oh, nice. And then in 2 years, I predict a lot of angry Facebook posts. Like, I don't have a manager. I've not been booked on a regular show yet.
I've heard that about Pete Holmes' show.
See,
Crashing.
That's what I was going to bring up. I watched that show, and it's a good show, but it's the same thing. It's like, it's so unrealistic, his trajectory. Like, for those of you that don't know the show, he's a struggling comic. His wife cheats on him, and he goes out and just starts telling jokes about it. And, like, within the context of the show, like,
it's ironic now that you're saying it, they're literally the exact same plot point.
Yeah.
In his show, it's set right now, and so the famous comics of the show are themselves. Yeah. He's just a character.
Yeah, Artie Lang, but Sarah Silverman.
Artie Lang takes him under his wing. Bill Burr lets him crash at his house.
Yeah.
He just gets a warm-up gig for a TV audience. Like, he just gets all this shit, just falls into his lap, and I'm like, are you fucking kidding
And famously, I know I've mentioned it before, but, like, I opened for Sarah Silverman in, like, my third year of doing stand-up. It was, like, the second real name I'd ever been. Like, it was by far the biggest comedy name I've ever opened for at that point. And just like Bobby said, in my head, I'm like, Sarah's going to see me crush. Yeah. She's going to be like, you know, get in the car. We're going on tour. I did crush. It was at the Improv in Hollywood. I came off stage. Sarah went up, of course, murdered. And afterwards, we were both outside on the sidewalk in front of the club. And our eyes met. And I was like, oh, here's where it comes. She goes, thanks for coming to the show. She did not even know I was on this performance. She did not only did not watch, but did not know who the fuck was opening for her.
I think that's actually a little bit worse. One of our old friends in comedy, he won a contest like 10 years ago to open for Sarah and Zach Galifianakis when they were here in San Diego.
Eric? Was it Eric?
Yes.
All right.
Now, his situation was like he won. He got the spot. He was like a new comedy. He was really good really early on, so he got the spot. Did really well, but it just happened to turn out that particular night, Sarah Silverman bailed on the show. Like, she didn't even show up.
Yeah.
He didn't even get to meet her, talk to her, nothing.
Yeah. These things happen. But my point is, even if a fucking famous person sees you do well, they got their own fucking problems.
Yeah, they're doing their own stuff.
Yeah.
What's interesting to me...
They're not trying to gift people careers.
Right. What's interesting to me is what we're talking about is, oh, this is how it really goes. The funny thing is, you don't even actually want the success you think you want. You don't want somebody to grab you on your third open mic and be like, come on, kid, you're coming on tour with me. Because you haven't gotten good yet. Like, no matter how good you think you are, you're just good for beginning, right? I just had this conversation with somebody who's starting up a podcast. I was like, I've been doing Science Faction for 6 years now. It is at a point now where it's...
Not giving up on that yet?
No. It's at a point now where it's good, and it's actually starting to take off. We're getting these really crazy numbers, and it's fantastic. However, I was listening back to our first episodes, and I'm so fucking glad that it didn't take off in the first few episodes because it was dog shit. Like, it takes a while to get good at what you do. If you get famous in the first 2 years that you're doing something, you're probably sucking at it, and you don't want that to be what the world knows
right.
you for.
I mean, like, your science podcast is good. I mean, it's still boring.
Sure,
but at least it's really good.
Yeah, it's good boring. It's very good at being boring. Yeah,
you get right.
People that
right
like
away.
Boring things, this is a show for you.
Yeah, no, so
he executes it masterfully.
What's interesting is that in the case of that, it's not only that that's not going to happen, you're not going to be super successful just because you had one or two like super great shows your first few times. You actually don't want that. Like, it's hard to convey that to young people. You don't want to be successful right now. You want to grind in anonymity and get all your bombing out of the way and work your clicks out and get your voice and get all that stuff done so that when we look at you years down the road, we don't see this person. Like, if you look back, there's a great video of Louis doing, like, I don't know, Leno or something back in the day, and
he looks was hacky as fuck.
So fucking hacky.
It was horrible. And he's not the guy you know now where he just kind of fucking, like, over life and just fucking, you know.
Yeah.
He was one of those guys, like, snapping his fingers, like, come on, people!
It's like when you see super early George Carlin, and he's like, hey, take my wife. Nobody else will. And you're like, this is George Carlin?
Catskills?
But
yes!
But if that had gotten famous, and George Carlin had 15 minutes of fame as the fucking knockoff, whatever, standard comedian back in the 60s, then he would not have become George Carlin because he didn't have the time to develop his voice.
To be fair, he couldn't have come out on Ed Sullivan and go like, you know what no one ever talks about anymore? Pussy farts.
Not then.
The curtain just collapses.
Now, the
up
other
next,
thing,
the Beatles.
The other thing about success is, like, success is never what you think it's going to be. Between the three of us, we have to know at least 100 comics who've been on Conan.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're still grinding, doing open mics, doing free shows.
One of them hit me up, like, I heard your Brewing Beard show pays $60.
Yeah,
were on Conan!
Yeah.
Yeah, and the measure of success that you think is good, people are like, oh my God, I got all these great college gigs. It pays so much. This is fantastic. This is more money than I've ever made in comedy, which is true.
Right.
But when you show up to the cafeteria at 3 p.m.
And there's four students and none of them are paying attention to you?
Well, no, there's four. That's the good part, is if none of them are paying attention. If three of them are pissed off because you didn't use the right pronoun, then now it's a living hell that you have to keep doing because you're getting paid well.
That's the more common, because we know a lot of guys that do colleges, the more common one is the one where, like, no one pays attention, no one gives a shit.
Yeah.
They make you do an hour anyways.
Yeah. You have to do an hour for nobody. Yeah.
It's you and the lunch lady.
Yeah. New comics don't know what they want. They're always so angry for the reasons we discussed, because they think by year two they should be somewhere and they're not.
Yeah.
And I've been enjoying this so much. Like, I've been doing this long enough where I've seen so many generations of comics come and go in this city, where, like, when I see them fight on Facebook now, you know, a bunch of 21 and 23-year-olds squabbling, I just watch. And what's so funny is I can see all of their futures, and they don't even know it. I'm like, you know what? I know where this fight's going to go. I know how it started. You just see one guy like, oh, I guess some guys think it's funny to show up to a show and, like, and not pay attention during my set or whatever the fucking issue is. I'm like, I see where all this is going, and I don't know what category you're all going to fall into, but I do know what categories there are. One of you is going to knock up a chick in a few years and then quit. One of you is going to get priced out of California and quietly move to fucking Nevada and never do comedy again. One of you is going to be like the hot shit, like, third year guy and then just be over it.
Yeah.
And one of you is going to get married, and one of you is going to get a big boy job. I don't know.
Too many of you are going to move to LA, not be ready, just sort of fade into anonymity.
And just be like, you'll be a trivia question to guys like me, like, whatever happened front of that guy. And the thing is, it doesn't matter which one of you is which, because in 5 years, 90% of you will be gone.
Yeah.
Gone. And so all this arguing you're doing, it doesn't matter, because I've seen you before. I've seen many of you before. And
some of you will be punching Adam Connie in the parking lot of a Denny's.
Right. And you know what? Whoever is left, the one guy out of the whole like couple dozen of you that is still doing this in 5 years, it's a crapshoot if you're going to be a Zoltan Kassis and touring colleges, or if you're going to be a fucking bitter dude that just shows up to Madhouse yeah. once every 6 months and goes,
right here, dude.
Fuck you guys. Yeah.
But
so,
also,
on
that group, at least three of them are going to get cheated on by their significant other, go to a bar and rant about it, and just become a success overnight. Yeah, someone's going to offer me the manager.
Yeah,
someone's going to take him on tour.
Yeah, at least three someone's of them. Gonna... Yeah,
Hannibal will be there, ready to take you in, have you in his opener.
Yeah, I just love that when people are like arguing amongst each other who's a hack and who's blah, blah, blah. I'm just like, you know what? Just enjoy this while you have it, because it's not sustainable.
Or even better, one of you will get cheated on by your girlfriend. You'll rant about it online. A bunch of people will come to your support, but then you'll take her back in about a week and a half, and everybody will have to pretend we didn't call her a bitch.
I hate that so fucking much. Yeah, everyone has that friend that wants you to take their like 400th breakup announcement seriously.
Right.
They get mad at you because you've heard this all before, and no matter how much they try and be like, no man, this time things were said and there's no going back. I'm like, ah, fuck you. Move, you're blocking the TV set.
Especially when they do that public Facebook post.
Oh,
where like,
man.
This is it. This is the last straw. It is officially over.
Yeah.
And then you see them out together a week later.
They post the pictures. People jealous of what we got. No, we're not. You have a toxic thing going on there. Speaking of Facebook, I was really taken to task a few times.
Yeah, you had a rough week or so. I noticed that.
Yeah. Here's how this all started. Is Aaron dragged me up to Julian, which is like a little quaint mountain town here in the San Diego area.
What'd you do up in Julian?
Just the Julian tourist shit. Like, we went up, enjoyed the snow, got
okay.
some hard cider, bought a slice of pie,
Oh, so just for, like, a day trip.
Just a day trip. Okay. We explored the little old cemetery up there, which is kind of fun. You know, visited their local brewery, and that's where... Here's the thing. It's a little touristy town, and everyone brings their fucking six kids up there.
That's true.
Which I don't understand why. They don't appreciate that. They're like, your fucking four-year-old's not like, that's a quaint little cabin.
I think it's because it's San Diego, and it's like, let's go up where there's snow, because kids will see it and think it's magic, like we've never seen this before.
I went to Julian once, maybe 15 years ago when I was married. Me and my wife went to do the tourist shit, and as soon as we got there, like, this town sucks. There are too many people. It's all tourist bullshit. Fuck this place.
Yeah,
see,
every
I love
place
Julian.
You went into, it was packed. Asses to elbows. It sucked. So
it's like Disneyland with no rides, no characters, and no fun.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And we just thought stupidly we'd be like the one of eight couples up there on this random Saturday. Nope.
Oh, God, on a weekend?
Oh,
Jesus.
Yeah, it was a huge mistake because neither of us like people.
Yeah.
So many kids. And we went to a brewery. We just needed a fucking drink. Because there were so many people that were stressing us out. They were in the way. There was kids screaming.
Yeah. And you see a brewery, and you're like, oh, that's like a refuge.
Yes.
Like, let's go.
There's a
get away
of
from
lights.
The crowd.
Yeah. And we go in there, and I forgot kids are allowed in breweries.
Yep.
And these fucking parents are up there just getting fucking tanked. And their kids are just screaming. Like, one guy, it was packed in there, too, so we weren't having any more fun in there. Like, we're just like, we have our arms tucked in. It's that kind of crowded. And we're just nursing our fucking hard cider or whatever. All of a sudden, this dude walks in, literally stressed because he has two fucking little kids with him, and he literally just like shoves them next to us and goes like, I can't, and like walks off. Well, just left us in charge, the two strangers in charge of his kids, and I'm like, these kids better be well behaved because I can't take any more kids screaming. No sooner did I say that
than one of the kids went, oh my God, is that Erin Shores? I love her. I came here just for her.
Oh, no. No sooner did I think that than one turned to the other and just slapped her sister across the face. I'm like, oh God, two, three. I'm like, and Erin just like grabs her temples like, I don't want to exist on this planet anymore face.
So there's a little part of me that was hoping that you would take the one that got hit and be, listen, here's what you got to do. Get in the guard, grab the arm, isolate the wrists.
This is called a gooseneck arm lock. It's very effective. I did some rant about it on Facebook. I'm like, just because you can bring your kids to a brewery doesn't mean you should.
Right.
If you're going somewhere to get tanked, fucking, you made a choice in life. And that's what I said. That was my big thing, is you have two choices in life. The joy of having children, which the Lord has not blessed me with, or... my consolation prize, the ability to go to a bar whenever you want.
The freedom, yep. Yes.
Yeah, the freedom. And then there's just a whole crap of people that just decide they get both. I'm going to have a kid, but I'm also going to go to a bar whenever I want without a sitter. I'll just fucking take them with me and make them someone else's fucking problem. You don't get both.
Yeah, it's funny, too, because we have a tactic for this in my family, which is we'll go to a brewery with a kid, with our kid, and
you'll pull them off on somebody else.
Yeah, just hand him off. I can't do it. No.
You go catching some guy.
But my wife and I, like, we take shifts. All right, I'm going to go have some beers. You watch the kid, vice versa. We'll switch back and forth. Perfect way to do it, because at some point you're always watching it. But I run into this too. And let me tell you, as a person who is a parent in that brewery, it frustrates me even more because, yeah, in that case, you had to deal with those kids.
Yeah.
I have to deal with those fucking kids every time I go there, because every time I go there, those kids are running around my kid, and I'm like, whose is this?
Yeah.
Who's got the...
Who does this belong to?
One of them's got literally a log of human feces in their hand, and they're running around hitting other kids. Who owns this? Who does? Because guess what? My wife and I, we are being the responsible ones taking turns watching our kid to make sure that our kid isn't doing this. Why can't you do the fucking same?
Now, when I posted that little rant, apparently, and by the way, the fucking point of it was you can't just get tanked with your kids while they run run amok.
Unless you're tag-teaming them, then it's okay.
Apparently, what people thought I said was, I'm talking to you personally, your kid sucks, I hate your kid, they should never go out in public anywhere, including McDonald's or Disneyland, and they're ill-behaved, and that's your fault because you suck. And because I got fucking attacked.
Now, oh, yeah.
Not by everyone. Some people are like, amen! Yeah. Fucking can't stand going to fucking bars with a kid running around. It's not appropriate. And others were just like, how fucking dare you? I will take my child wherever I want to. By the way, my kid's very well behaved. I'll have you know. I'm like, well,
you don't know what it's like. Yeah. To have to try to take care of a child.
Yeah. And want to get tagged. So
yeah, there is a weird like abdication of responsibility when it comes to kids, where people are like, yeah, I had a kid, but you know, you can't expect me to be responsible for
right.
it. What's going on here?
Yeah. You don't know what it's like to choose to have a kid and then have to stick with that decision.
This happened.
That's basically what they're saying.
Yeah. This happened a while ago, actually, Ryan, with another one of your posts where you had said something along the lines of, if you show up late, you should never start the sentence with, it's not my fault.
Right.
Which I agree. I could not fucking thumbs up that
and
more.
And could you not have a piping hot cup of Starbucks in your hand when you fucking say it?
I could not believe in that more, because when you show up late, it doesn't matter what happened, the first words out of your mouth is, I'm sorry I'm late. That should be the first one. Yeah. If you want to then explain what happened, maybe it's irrelevant, whatever.
The second thing I should be here, watch my kids.
Yeah, I can't even.
I can't. I need to go get plastered.
And somebody chimed in and they're like, oh yeah, but you don't know what it's like. I have a kid and every once in a while they poo right before I leave. And
you
I
need
was,
to fucking carve out some
that,
time
yeah.
for poo time.
Here, I'm a parent too. I'm the primary caretaker of my son. Every once in a while, when I'm about to leave somewhere, he poos. I know that's a possibility.
Yeah.
It's not like I've suddenly found out that children poo. Like, I have to equate for that, and that means that sometimes I have to leave someplace 5 minutes early. So if he does poo, I can change him in the car when I get to the place. You know whose fault it is? Mine. I'm the parent. It doesn't make it not my fault. Also, you know whose fault it isn't? My boss's, because he didn't bang my wife and make a baby.
Right.
No matter what. It's my fault. So like that weird abdication of like, oh, it's not my fault. It was the kid. Really? Who had the kid?
Yeah.
See, now my favorite thing about Ryan being taken to task on the brewery thing, and how you mentioned that one about being late, he had about a week or so of a string of these rants where, for whatever reason, everyone decided to take it seriously. Because there was another one where you were like, you were talking about how somebody asked for a dollar or something, and you give it to them, and instead of saying thank you, they ask for something on top of that.
Yeah.
And you're like, what the fuck?
You should be able to take $2 back when that happens. Yeah. If you give somebody a buck and they ask for a cigarette, you should pull $2.
I don't know if you saw this one, Bobby, but a bunch of people chimed in like, hey, man, that guy might be having a really tough time.
Oh, my God.
He deserves to have a tough time if that's his attitude.
Yeah. So Ryan had like a week of like these posts where he was doing his traditional rants that he always does, and just for whatever reason, everybody took him the wrong way.
And
it was just hilarious.
Also, that's when you find those people that you didn't even realize were on your friends on your friends list, except when they stop by to tell you you're an asshole, you're sexist, or you're stupid. Like there's the first one on that brewery one. This chick was like, I don't know, something to the effect of, it's very charming when I get drunk in front of my kids or whatever. No, she said something along the lines of like, you fucking don't know what you're fucking talking about. You're an idiot. Why don't you shut up? I'm like, who is this asshole? I'm like, let's see here. Oh. I worked with this chick fucking 8 years ago at a company I'm no longer at. And so ostensibly, she's been on my Facebook for 8 years probably, never said one word to me until now when she needs to tell me that, oh, you're a dick for insinuating I shouldn't get drunk with my children.
Could you just take her and a group of people like her as Facebook friends, hand them off to another person on Facebook and be like, I can't.
No, dude, I can't stand that Facebook friend that you don't even know you have until they pop up and say something shitty.
I think the problem is too much support. That is the person who, by definition, has everybody on their Facebook feed as like friends or just people they've conditioned to be unconditionally supportive of them. So when they say that, they're like, you go, girl. Yeah, you're right. You should get drunk. What you need to do, as we've talked about before, is get a whole group of like 100 people to just constantly shame and belittle people when they make those comments, and they'll stop. Eventually, they will stop.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't think they will, man. I don't think any man. They have no shame. What are you talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with Ryan on that one. I see what you're trying to do, but
I think the problem is too much support. You have too much artificial support for people who constantly pat you on the back for that. Whereas if you had that exact same amount of people going, "Hey, shut your fucking mouth and stop getting drunk with your kid, idiot," then eventually, if for no other reason, even if they didn't personally feel shame, they're like, ooh, this looks bad
but
for
Bobby,
me.
Bobby, you don't know their story.
I don't know their story.
No, they're allowed to act however they want because you don't know their story.
Oh, my God. Wait a second. Guys, I just figured this out. That's your response from now on. Hey, you don't know my story.
You don't know my story.
Every time they say that.
Turn around. Oh, yeah. Oh, I never thought of this.
We're going to fucking Aikido the shit out of these bitches.
I love it. Dude, you know what? Here's the thing. All these people take me to task usually for something, for a joke I posted, is they always need to start out by telling me that they're not guilty of the behavior I'm describing.
Right.
Good. Then why are you fucking offended by this? Yeah. Like, if I say you shouldn't get drunk with your children while they run wild. Hey, I never get drunk with my kid, and they're very well behaved. Good. No, I'm not talking about you.
I feel like they are, though. They're just saying it's the same thing as people saying, "Hey, it's not my fault. I'm late."
Yeah.
Yeah, so they see themselves in the behavior that I'm describing, and they fucking know that I have them dead to rights on it with the logic. So they're just chiming in, apropos of nothing, just to tell me I'm wrong. I'm wrong that I know you're talking about me, and that's not right.
Yeah, me thinks that protests too much.
Yes. If I didn't name you in this joke, then you have nothing to defend yourself against, isn't it?
Oh, that's what you start doing. Tag people in your rants.
I hate people that huff paint. I just tag a random chick that I used to work with 8 years ago in a company I'm no longer at.
And she's like, "You don't know my story. I have these kids I have to deal with all the time."
And she has blue around her mouth.
But Bobby, you're right too about these people. They get that way because of too much support. Because that's the exact same thing that happened a couple weeks ago here in San Diego when someone was being an asshole. And instead of taking him to task, too many people are like, "Hey, man, you do you. Hey, man. Just do yourself."
Oh, like, yeah.
It's so fucking annoying.
Anytime I see somebody comment, "You do you," 9 times out of 10, not anytime, but 9 times out of 10, it's someone who's encouraging really shitty self-destructive behavior.
Yeah. Other times they're encouraging masturbation. That's good. Everything else, that's bad.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure I inspired a lot of fucking moms to jump on there like, "Hey, if I want to get drunk with my kid, I don't see why a comedian should have to say anything about it." I bet a bunch of their little friends jumped on there and went, "Yeah, you do you."
Well, yeah.
Don't let anyone talk shit. Don't listen to the haters.
It's too much. It's too much what I would call negative support. It's support for negative actions that people think they're being positive. They think they're helping their friend out. They're totally crippling them.
Right.
They're completely crippling them. Our buddy Dewey put out a post recently about the R. Kelly thing, because R. Kelly had a very famous...
R. Kelly should keep doing him.
Yeah.
Just keep it going. Don't listen to the haters. You keep peeing on minors.
Well, R. Kelly had this documentary that just came out, and now it's really opening people's eyes
Have you seen it?
Yeah, I have. Surviving I saw the first three, first three episodes out of six.
Oh, it's a docuseries?
Yeah,
I didn't realize
six
that.
Episodes. It's on demand on Lifetime. You guys can probably go find it now. It's free cable. Really interesting. I knew some of the stuff from Cult Podcast actually covered him, our friend Paige Wesley, but so I had known some of the stuff before, but it is fucking shocking.
Yeah.
And then what's even worse is Dewey, our comedian friend,
fully supports R. Kelly, says you do.
No, he put a post up and he said, "How many people are still defending R. Kelly?" And people did. They openly defended
him. You don't know his story. Oh, wait, you do. He pees on people who are not of age to have sex.
For 25 years has been having sex with 13 and 14-year-olds on a regular basis who he lures in as, "Oh, I'm going to help you with your music career."
Yeah, basically is a cult.
And then keeps them literally sequestered away in a studio in Chicago that they are not allowed to leave.
Right.
What?
Yes, and has sex. He has bedrooms built into this massive studio he has in Chicago because he's so busy banging kids. He can't
be. Has he had a fucking national hit since Space Jam came out?
He can't be bothered to leave the building. He has to have his slave dungeon of little girls in the building he's in, and people still come to this piece of shit's defense.
Hey, man, separate the music from the person, whatever.
Listen, I don't even disagree with the idea of separating the music from the person. I disagree.
Wait. These little girls he's having sex with.
Yes.
He doesn't bring them to a brewery, though. I don't need that kind of thing going on.
He's got a brewery built into the studio.
Oh, good. Okay, well, that's acceptable. Can I go?
Takes him up. I can't even. No, wait. I can and a half.
Oh, man, we're basically laughing at sex abuse.
Yeah, right.
So we should probably stop that. But I got to see this thing.
It's
crazy.
It's absolutely stunning. If you guys get a chance, go listen to Paige Wesley's Cult podcast when they cover R. Kelly, because they also go into depth in it. It is disgusting, and you wonder how the fuck he managed to do this. This is going on 3 decades he's been doing this. It's crazy. And he seems to get off scot-free every time, including when there's videos of him sexually assaulting and, as they say, urinating in the mouth of a 14-year-old girl. And that's just one of many, many things.
Dude, how does Louis get taken down, but this shit is still acceptable?
It's crazy, and people openly defend him.
That's gross.
And one of the defenses on Dewey's wall was somebody like, hey, all I'm saying is, you know, hey, it's other people's fault too, you know.
Where were the parents?
Yeah, and I'm like, okay, true. If I was a parent, I wouldn't let my 14-year-old girl there. Does not at all take away the culpability of the man who's raping a 13 and 14-year-old girl.
Right. Speaking of cults, man, you said there was a cult member running for office somewhere?
That's true. Tulsi Gabbard just announced that she is going to be running for the Democratic ticket.
Now, I never heard this name before you mentioned her.
I never have either.
Just an hour ago to me.
And what is she running for, by the way?
She's going to be running for president in 2020.
Oh, president?
Yikes.
Yes. She's a congressperson from Hawaii.
Okay, so she's already in politics.
Yes, and has been.
Just some fringe person coming out of nowhere.
Well, she is a fringe person, but she's been in politics. She's very, very interesting. Again, another reference to Cult podcast. You can go back and check out their episode on this, but this all starts
back. They better be plugging our podcast, too.
Yeah,
I'm just
right?
Say it.
Yeah.
Back in the 70s, this guy, it's great because he's not even like, you know, they're like, it's Rajneeshi something or something like that. This is just a guy named Chris in Hawaii. There's just this guy named Chris in Hawaii. He decides to start his own cult. It doesn't go that well, so he joins the Hare Krishnas, and then they get pissed at him because he's trying to promote his own cult inside Hare Krishnas.
Oh, man. Infiltrate, destroy, rebuild.
He moves to New Zealand with a bunch of his cult followers. They have a little thing there. Then they decide to move to Australia. They have a big ranch there where he raises a bunch of these kids.
Anytime some dude buys a ranch, something's going
around. Yeah, and
what's the deal with his cult? What's their thing?
Well, so here's some of the fucked up shit. One is they're super, super homophobic.
Very lax on kids in breweries. Right.
They have a whole bunch of horrible beliefs. But at one point, he's like, all right, well, as part of our cult system, all of these kids have to drop out of school when they're like 10 to learn how to cook and clean for me, Chris, the guy who's the guru. I'm the head of the cult. You stop with this.
And get back to work at my studio.
Yeah. Who needs to learn about parabolas and hypotenuses? You need to learn how to cook my eggs the right way. Chris needs his eggs, right? And so he's like, all right, we're going to pull all these kids out of school. And Australia was like, no, man, you can't just pull these kids out of school to make them.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, and so he's like, oh, really? Well, okay, well, let's just send them to boarding school in the Philippines where they don't give a shit, and they'll let them learn how to just be servants for me their entire lives.
Now, how do you have access to these kids? Were they his kids?
No, they are members of the cult.
Members of the cult?
Yep.
He's like, all right, pull your kids out of school. Okay, we're going to send them to boarding school. All right.
Yep, and
well, what's going to just stop the Australian school system from saying, I sent them to the Philippines?
Oh, they'll check on you and stuff. Like, if you're doing a homeschool, you have to show a certain amount of work and certain stuff like that.
Okay.
And this was getting around all those rules, is just send them off to the Philippines, and we don't have to do anything about it. And she was one of those kids that got sent off to the Philippines to go, you know, learn how to cook for Chris. And eventually they all moved back to Hawaii, and then they started funneling a bunch of money to get people into local Hawaiian politics because they didn't want to go the route of Scientology. They didn't want to get kicked out of everything. The only way to stop that is to have political power. And in a place like Hawaii, the population is so small that you can run people for these offices, get them in small places like the school board, and build them up so that then they become congresspeople and senators, state congresspeople, then national congresspeople, which is what she is. She is literally a cult member. And she
now
is not.
That is infiltrate,
yes.
Destroy, rebuild.
Yes.
That's how you do that shit.
And she was raised in this cult. She went off to the Philippine boarding school.
She got elected on a platform of how well she makes eggs and how clean she can.
Chris is still her guru. She still talks
is
about
that
how she's
still alive.
Oh, yeah. And she's still devoted to him completely. completely. And
oh man! So, Chris is going to be doing a puppet government here. Oh, nice!
He's the deep state.
Oh man! All schools get closed across the nation. No need for those anymore.
Graduation is now eighth grade. Yeah. You're done.
Yeah, it's like a belt ceremony for martial arts. Only you have to learn. You have to demonstrate how well you flip a fucking over easy egg.
And it's sad. There was somebody came out with an article that's like, yes, I grew up in the cult with her, worshiping Chris, and they said all the horrible shit that went on, and it was just absolutely horrible. But she's like, one of the things is, it's hard to blame this woman. It's hard to be like, hey, you shouldn't be allowed to run for this office, because she's also a victim, right?
Right.
She spent her entire life there. She doesn't know any different. However, at the same time, they're like, you don't want this person to be president. You absolutely don't want this person.
But at the same time, you have Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we can't give you keys.
You are psychologically fucked.
Which you will then hand off to an even more insane person.
Right.
Than
yeah.
Yourself.
Yeah. And by the way, you can't be a guru with the name Chris. I'm sorry. Like, you just can't.
You need to change it.
Yeah.
You need to change it to something just like Kama Mustafa. Yeah. Something.
Now, Bobby, I want to ask you, when you mentioned Chris, the guru.
Yeah.
And this might actually be a better question for our friend Paige. There's always like that statistic or whatever that like, mass shooters are always white men. Serial killers are always white men. It's sort of prevalent.
By the way, serial killers aren't, but yeah.
Prevalently, though, it's mostly white men. Are cult leaders almost always white men?
No.
I feel like...
No. Like the Oregon, the big Oregon one, there's a lot of Indian people running them.
Women is what I'm getting at. Do women ever start cults?
Yes. So there's a very famous South Korean one.
But why is it never a sex cult?
Yeah. Yeah.
Every time there's a sex cult, there's just a creepy... just a creepy doughy guy that just wants to bang...
There's a few with women. It's still predominantly men. There are some with women. A lot of times they have like very loyal female followers too, who essentially run the cult, like that sex cult that the girl from Smallville was in.
Oh yeah, yeah.
She was essentially running that cult with that guy. And so
but you weren't allowed to have sex with her. I checked.
Right. Yeah. That's why I almost joined.
Right.
That was a deal breaker.
I was out. All the paperwork. So you're like, no, you have to have sex with Chris. I'm like, damn it.
You're saying I can't even.
You're retarded.
Yeah, so there are some of that. There's a lot of Indian dudes running cults. There's a lot of different cults that are around. There are, I would say there's probably a disproportionate amount of white dudes running them, though, yeah.
But you're definitely 100% right. Chris is not a cult leader.
No, it can't be Chris. No. What are you talking about? Like, what are you going to learn the majesty of parallel parking? Like, I feel like he's got nothing to teach us.
Maybe we should join. Find out. All right, let's call it a week. I'm Ryan for Dave and Bobby. Before we get out of here, though, tickets are still available for my Burning Beard Brewery show. That's going to be happening this Thursday, the 17th. And our lineup will be Alex Parent, Neil Singh, Sam Wiles, and headliner Jesse Egan.
Sam Wiles and Jesse, fucking great lineup right there.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. So remember, tickets are only available at the brewery in El Cajon. That's Burning Beard Brewery, Thursday the 17th. All right, we'll see you next week, Cruising with the Twos.
We're going to fucking Aikido the shit out of these bitches. Yeah, time passing by.
Motherfucking time is passing by.
Hey, shut your fucking mouth and stop getting drunk with your kid, idiot.